Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Lamed Vav. We got pretty far down already, Lamed Vav Umed Aleph, almost halfway down. We're in the words Amar Rabbi Elazar, which are found towards the end of the Tosos, V'nimtza. And we are reminding ourselves that yesterday we had a machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan as to whether or not we say that a Ibum or a Chalitza that was done to a pregnant woman can work. Rav Yochanan was the opinion that despite the fact that you shouldn't do so, if after the fact you did a Yibam or a Chalitza to a pregnant woman, so then Mimanushach. If the child that was born is of Lacho Kayama, so then what you did was wrong, and it has no effect whatsoever. So Yibam that you did, you're going to have to bring a Chatas for, because it wasn't supposed to have been done. And if you did the Chalitza, it doesn't in any way assay you from her relatives or her from your relatives. And in fact, the woman is still permitted to marry a Kohen. She's just a widow, and she would be allowed to marry a Kohen because we don't consider her a chalutza. That was Rav Yochanan's opinion. Reish Lakish's opinion, which is interesting how we paskin, as we'll see from today's Gemara, we normally paskin like Rav Yochanan against Reish Lakish with three exceptions, which we're going to learn today, and this is one of them. And Reish Lakish says that no, the Yibam or the Chalitza was done while the woman is pregnant, in fact, does not work. And in this situation, the woman still requires a new Chalitza, a new Yibam, after if the child does not have Lad Shokayama. Again, Rav Yochanan says that it did work. And if, in fact, it was a child that wasn't of Lad Shokayama, so then the Yibam worked and the Chalitza worked. It doesn't require anything new. Okay, so now, in this regard, we start again about 20 lines down from the top, Lamed Vav and Aleph, with the words Amar Rabbi Elazar. Amar Rabbi Elazar, the Amora Rabbi Elazar says, Efshar, Esau, Lahor, the Reish Lakish, is it possible the Reish Lakish, who we paskin like, said something and there isn't a source for it in the Tanoic literature? Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan were first generation Amoraim, they were great, great, great individuals, but it's unlikely Rabbi Elazar felt, Rabbi Elazar was a star pupil of Rav Yochanan. When Reish Lakish died, he took over the premier position of being the Talmud Chaver of Rav Yochanan. And he said it's impossible that this machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which we paskin like Reish Lakish, there shouldn't be some sort of a tanoic source for Reish Lakish's din. So again, he says, is it possible, Efshar, Isa, Lahor, the Reish Lakish, Velo, Tnan, Lobin, Masdisin, and there shouldn't be some sort of a Mishnaic source, a tanoic source for his opinion? And therefore, Norfak, he went out, Dak, he investigated, the Ashkach, and he found. As is often the case with learning, if a person goes and learns and learns truly with Hasmada, he will figure out whatever the problem is. Tithnan, and he found this following Mishnah. This is a Mishnah later in our Masecht on Daf Kufyut Tes. And the Mishnah there says, Oisha Shaholach Bala Vitzarosa Limdina Sayam. A man had two wives, Reuven has two wives, Rachel and Chana. They're unrelated to each other. And Rachel and Chana have been married to Reuven. They don't have any children. Neither one of the wives has any children. And Chana, the tzara of Rachel, goes off on this business trip with her husband Reuven. So Isha, Shaholach Bala Vitzaros Abdina Sayam. This woman, Rachel, her husband, and her co-wife, Chana and Reuven, went off on a business trip to Medina Sayam, and she gets a report back, Ubo V'amula, a trustworthy witness. They're able to go and remarry, even based upon a single witness, with the exception of five women, which we'll learn later in the Masechta, who have ulterior motives. So, for example, we don't trust her mother-in-law. We don't trust a sister-in-law to go and say that your husband passed away, because we're always concerned that they may have ulterior motives, and as a result, they would like to encourage her to go and get married to somebody else and then have a huge problem if and when the husband really wasn't dead and he comes back. So those women are not believed. But in general, even an Eid Echad is believed because Mishum Aguna, and because, as we learned previously, that she's going to go Dayik the Insva, she's going to go and check it out real well. So therefore, she's believed, able to believe a single witness. So here you have a single witness or even witnesses. Ubal V'Armula, Meis Balach, your husband died. So in this situation, the Mishnah states, Harezu lo sinose lotus yabim. This Rachel, who was left behind, is not allowed to go get married, even though normally she would be allowed to go get married based upon that testimony. Here she can't go get married, but she also can't have Yibam. Let's say there is a brother, Shimon. As far as she knows, Reuven died without having any children. So she can't have Yibam. Why is that? Because we're concerned, Achitedan, she knows for a fact, Shemomu Beres, he saw Russell. We have to be concerned that the co-wife, Chana, that went off on the business trip, maybe she is pregnant. And therefore, if she is in fact pregnant, she can't undergo Yibam right now because maybe there's a Vlad Shul Kayama. And she can't go married Muteris Lashuk because maybe it's not a Vlad Shul Kayama. So therefore, she has to figure out, the Mishnah tells us, what happened to this Tzara. If she's possibly pregnant, do we know the results of that pregnancy, or do we know for a fact that she's not pregnant? And then this Rachel would either be allowed to be taken in Yibam if we know for a fact that she, the Tzara, Chana, did not have a pregnancy. So then Reuven died childless, and therefore she would fall Yibam to Shimon. And Shimon could either do Yibam with her or give her Chalitza, and then she's Muteris Lashuk. And if the co-wife, in fact Chana, was pregnant and gave birth to a Vlad Shul Kayama, only then does she go off scot-free. She's Muteris Lashuk. Now, Bishlama Yavume Lo, Rabbi Elazar said, let's look at this Mishnah. We don't allow Rachel, who's stayed back behind, to go and undergo Yibam with Shimon, because maybe the co-wife, Chana, actually was pregnant. Shema Yehei Vlad Ben Kayama, and therefore, the Yivka Be'isr, Eishasach, Dioraisa. What would happen in this situation? It's Eishasach, Shalom, and Makom Mitzvah, and Shimon would be prohibited in Isser of Kares. Major league problem if Shimon were to go marry his brother's wife when his brother had children. So maybe this Chana is pregnant and has a Vlad Shul Kayama. So that's why you can't do Yibam right now. But why not let her do Chalitza? So if Rav Yochanan is right, then do Chalitza, and then Mimanashach. If it's a Vlad Shul Kayama, Chalitza wasn't necessary. If it's not a Vlad Shul Kayama, so then the Chalitza works. But the Mishnah didn't give that option. Elalo Tachlots, am I? Why not do Chalitza, according to Rav Yochanan? So Bishlama, Tachlots, Bitoch, Tisha, Bisinose, Bitoch, Tisha. Certainly we understand why we don't allow it to have the Chalitza during the 9 months that we're waiting to see if the pregnancy is viable, that there will be a birth of a Vlad Shul Kayama to get married during that 9 period of time. Lo, we certainly don't allow that because Hainu Sopik, that's exactly the point, that maybe it's not a Vlad Shul Kayama and she would need the Chalitza or Yibam, or maybe it is a Vlad Shul Kayama and she doesn't need the Yibam or Chalitza. So we understand not doing it until the 9-month period is up. But that's the Sopik, Hainu Sopik. But Ella, Tachlots, Betoch, Tisha, why not, according to Rav Yochanan, undergo the Chalitza right now and just only allow her to get married, Tinasi Liachatisha, but wait to actually get married, Muteris Lashuk, till afterwards, and then Mimanashach. If there was a Vlad Shul Kayama, which is only from the time of the birth, so then in that situation, we would have no problem. And if, in fact, she needs Chalitza, well, the Chalitza was already done. If it's a Vlad that wasn't Shul Kayama, so the Chalitza was done. So it must be that Reish Lakish is right, that the Chalitza doesn't work, and that's why the Mishnah said that you wait until after the 9 months, Harei Zo Lo Tinosiv Lo Tisyabim, Acheteda Shem Omoberes Hitzarosa, and that it was a Vlad Shul Kayama, or that it wasn't a Vlad Shul Kayama. You have to know definitively. So Rav Elazar says, oh, here's the Raya to Reish Lakish. So the Gemara says, no, that's not correct. Ula Taimech, and according to this understanding, so then it should have said, Tachlots V'Tinosei Liachar Tisha. It should have just said, you don't have to find out anything. Wait 9 months, do the Chalitza then, Mimanashach. She's absolutely not pregnant at that point in time. Either a Vlad Shul Kayama has been born and the Chalitza is not necessary, or it was Nebuch, a miscarriage, or it was a child that was born and then died. It wasn't a Vlad Shul Kayama, and then at that point in time, she doesn't require Yibam Chalitza. No, Tachlots then, V'sinos Iliachatisha. That's what the Mishnah should have said, but that's not what it said. So therefore, Ela Bar Mino Dahahi. This is the exception to the rule, as you see in the widest lines in Rashi. The first of the widest lines in Rashi, Rashi explains Ela Bar Mino Dahi, Klomar Meahi, from this Mishnah, Lo Tidok Siyatu L'Reish Lakish. You cannot bring a riot to Reish Lakish, because after all, Doha Diktani Lo Sachlots Betok Tes, V'tinosi Lachates, so we understand, Hosom Tam Alav Mishum Sofik Yavom Aloshoku, Elo Kidabai Barovin. As we'll see in a second, the reason why we don't allow anything in this situation is nothing to do with the Machlokas of Yochanan Reish Lakish. Ella, you know what it is? The Abaye Bar Abba, the Rab Chanina Bar Abaye. That's the Girsa that we have. However, and the Mesoros HaShas says it should be that it's Abaye Bar Ovin, Rab Chanina Bar Ovin. Both of them were the sons, two sons of Rab Ovin. The Amri Tavayu, they both said the following, that Shema Yehei Vlad Ben Kayama. We have to be concerned that a Vlad Shel Kayama will be born. V'nimtzato matzricho Cruz Likuhuna. And what's going to happen if a Vlad Bar Kayama is born? So then the Chalitza is an absolutely unnecessary thing. Reuven died with children, so you don't need Yibam or Chalitza. And therefore, what's going to happen? Everybody's going to know that this woman underwent Chalitza, but they're not going to know that it wasn't necessary. And people are going to mistakenly think, Kruz Likuhuna. So people are going to see that this woman gets married to a Kohen, and say, wait, she's a Bar Chalutza. Oh, must be. This is a din derabbanan. It must be that we're not strict about this. So it must be that it's not a real din, and that a Kohen is allowed to marry Chalutza. Where in fact, midaraisa, a Kohen can't marry Gerusha, and the rabbi said, because Chalitza and Gerishin are very similar, so therefore they forbade midarabbanan, a Chalutza, to marry a Kohen, just like midaraisa, a Gerusha is not allowed to marry a Kohen. So now, everybody's going to see that a Chalutza married a Kohen, and they're not going to know that it really was because the Chalitza was not necessary. So Gemara says, okay, so litzucha, so make such an announcement. What's the big deal? So Gemara says, no. You know what's going to happen? A lot of people were at the chalitza, right? Chalitza is an unusual event. So everybody shows up at the chalitza. They put it in the local Jewish newspapers that so-and-so underwent chalitza and have pictures of it because it's an unusual event. And Dilma, you know what's going to happen? Iko inish tahavi b'chalitza. There'll be people that were around at the chalitza, the lo havi b'chalitza. And they weren't around at the time of the hachraza. V'osi lemeimar, kashare chalitza lekohen. And as a result, only a small number of people are going to realize that that chalitza was not a really required chalitza, and that's why this chalitza is allowed to marry a Kohen, because it really was not a chalitza, but they're not going to know that. And they're going to unfortunately make the mistake and say that a woman who's a chalitza is allowed, in fact, to go and marry a Kohen. So that's why we don't do this. But it has nothing to do with the machlokas of Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish. So that schlugged up Rabbi Elazar's attempted proof. But the Gemara is not happy to just schlug it up once. The Gemara schlugs it up again. Amar Abaye. Abaye says as well to Rabbi Elazar that that's incorrect. What did the Mishnah at the end of the Masechta, Daf Kuf Yud Tes, actually say? Did it say, Mide lo tachlos v'lo tisyabim? Ktani? Did it say, don't do chalitza, don't do yibam? That's not what it said. It said, lo tinase v'lo tisyabim, ktani. It said, don't allow this woman to go married Lashuk, and don't allow her to undergo yibam. It didn't mention anything about chalitza, but it implied, don't do these things below chalitza, because that could lead to a problem. But the implication is, it didn't mention chalitza, it just said, don't get married Lashuk, because maybe it was a Vlad that was not a Vlad Shokayama, and therefore she requires Yibam chalitza, but don't undergo Yibam, because that could be an Aveira, because if it's in fact a Vlad Shokayama, you're over Nitzav Kares. But didn't mention anything about chalitza. So therefore, Avoli Chalitzla, one could interpret the Mishnah as implying that if you did, in fact, the chalitza, hachanami deshayu, that would also permit it. It's only, you can't let her go get married lashuk or do yibam, but it didn't say anything specifically about chalitza. So Abaya shlugs up Rabbi Lazar's attempted finding of a Mishnah to support Reish Lakish, also not a good proof. However, we do have a brisa that supports Reish Lakish, and that's a very strong proof. Tanya Kavasi the Reish Lakish. We do have a brisa that supports Reish Lakish Shita, that Yibam Chalitza cannot be done while the woman is pregnant, and it said Beferish, Hacholetz Limu Beres. If a man gives Chalitza to his brother's widow when she was in fact pregnant, and then Vihipila, and Nebuch, the child was miscarried, and therefore she really requires Yibam Chalitza to get out of that marriage still to her dead husband. She falls in Yibam Chalitza because her husband died without any children. So Tzricha Chalitza Min Ha'achad, that she does still require Chalitza. The original Chalitza that she had is no good. And as we explained yesterday, the simple understanding of this means she requires a Chalitza from any one of the brothers, including the one that gave her Chalitza. Others suggest, no, she requires Chalitza from a different one of the brothers. And others suggest she requires Chalitza from every single one of the brothers, because in this situation she had already undergone a Patzel, a Chalitza, so therefore each brother needs to give her own Chalitza. But the simple understanding is she just needs one Chalitza from any one of the brothers, including the one that gave her Chalitza. But clearly this Braisa shows, like Reish Lakish, that a Chalitza on a pregnant woman doesn't work. How do we paskin? So Amar Rava. Rava says this is one of the rare exceptions when we paskin like Reish Lakish over Rav Yochanan. Hilchasav kavasi the Reish Lakish behani tlas chad hod yamarin. And the halacha follows Reish Lakish over Rav Yochanan only in three situations, and this is one of them. The one we just said, the machlokis, does yibam machalitza work on a pregnant woman, where Reish Lakish says it doesn't. Rav Yochanan says it does. So that is the halacha like Reish Lakish. What are the other two? Idach, the first of the other two is as follows, the Tanan. This is a Mishnah in Bava Basra. In fact, both of these would be from Bava Basra. Other two cases where we follow Reish Lakish's opinion over Rav Yochanan are both from Bava Basra. The first one is the following case in Bava Basra. Hamachalik Mechosav Alpiv. If a person is Rachmona Lusan on his deathbed, and he's a Shchiv Meira, so we have a rule that a person on his deathbed, in order that we should not discomfort him and chas v'shom cause him to die even a second earlier because he's very much anxious, so therefore we have the famous rule, divrei shchiv meira kiksuvim u'misurin domim. Dummy. If a person who's a shchivir on his deathbed says, I want you to do this, so you don't have to write up a shtar and sign it and give it, whatever he says, it's as if, ki'ilu ksuvim, like they were written up, umisurin, and handed over, dummy. Therefore, in this situation, this shchiv meira said the following. Hamachalek nechosav alpiv. He's dividing up his property at the end of his life. Now, if he dies without dividing up the property, so then we have the regular rules of Yerusha. A Bechor gets pishnayim of anything that's extant, and all the other brothers get one share. So let's say there's a Bechor Ruvain, and you have two other brothers, Shimon and Levi. So then you divide the Yerusha up into four equal parts. Ruvain takes two of the parts. Shimon takes one part. Levi takes one part. If there's seven brothers, you divide it up into eight equal portions. Ruvain gets two of the portions, and every one of the other brothers gets 1/8 of the portion. So that's how you divide up a Yerusha. Very simple, straightforward. But here, that's not what the father wants. So if you give a present before the person dies, so then that's not called Yerusha. And a person can do whatever he wants with his property. He can give it away during his lifetime to anybody he wants. He doesn't have to follow with all the laws of Yerusha. The Torah says it's his money. He can do with it whatever he wants. Only if you die, then you have to follow the laws of Yerusha. And likewise, a person cannot make a tenai against the laws of Yerusha. He's not allowed to go say, when I die, I want the Yerusha to be divided up in the following way. I want the Shimon to get the Pishnayim and not the Bechor Ruvein. Or I want everybody to get evenly. Or I want anything else to happen. Now, there are ways to go and make sure that, for example, nowadays that the daughters are given an equal share in the Yerusha. So there are halachically acceptable ways that you can do this. But if you're just making a simple tenai and say, I want the laws of Yerusha to be bypassed in that lashon, so then they're not bypassed. The tenai against Masha Kosa B'Torah doesn't work. So therefore, this is an acceptable mishnah, tells us an acceptable way to divide up your property in order that it shouldn't follow the laws of Yerusha, because you're giving it as a matana before you die, and that's allowed. So, hamachalik nechosav alpiv, if a person is dividing up his property as a shchiv meira with just the words of his mouth, kiksuvim umesurin dami, and we can view that as halachically as it's binding. So, riba le'echad umiyat le'echad, he gives Reuven more, he gives Shimon more, he gives the other one less. So, anyway, he divides it up. Or, v'hishul ha'mes ha'bachor, he doesn't give the bachor pishnayim, he gives all the children an equal amount of the Yerusha. I heard of Willich Shlita once give a share on this, and he said he was the poor in his family, and he was Mavater. And he said, listen, in this situation, he thinks all the children should go and inherit in exactly the same way. So you're allowed to not accept the Yerusha. That's certainly something that is appropriate to be done. In any event, if the father did this before he died, so then it's absolutely allowable. The Mishnah states Devar of Kayamim. This is an absolute valid thing. It's not a Yerusha. This is a gift. The father can give any gifts that he wants to. However, the Mishnah states, V'imamar Mishum Yerusha, if he says, this division that I'm doing should function as Yerusha, so then, Lo Amar Klum. You can't make it tonight against Masha Kosa B'Torah. The Torah tells us the laws of inheritance, and therefore, in this situation, his words are nothing, because he didn't give them as a gift. He gave them as a tonight against Yerusha, and that doesn't work. Now, the Mishnah then has an additional statement, which there's a machlokis as to how to understand the statement. And I'll give the first way, the way Rav Yochanan understands this statement. Kosav, if they had written down, Bein Betchila, Bein Besof, Bein Beemtza, if at any point in time they had written down that this should be a present, as well as saying that it should be a Yerusha, and this is at the beginning, in the middle, or at the end. Rashi explains over here in the bottom Rashi's. He says, Batchila, he says on the bottom line, Tinasein Sade Plonis Leploni V'Yirashena. So he starts off in saying, I want this field to be given to this child, and he should inherit this field. But he started off using the Lashon of Matana, or Be'emtza. He said, it should be a Yerusha, V'Tinasein Lo V'Yarsha. It should be a Yerusha, but give it to him as a gift, and then it's his inheritance. So again, he only said in the middle that it's a Matana, or B'Sof. He says at the end it's a matana. Yarsha v'tinasin lo. He says that it should be a Yerusha, but then at the end he says it's a matana. So in all of these situations, as long as he put in at any point in time, Mishum matana, devarav kayamim. This is in fact a valid matana and not a tenai against Masha Kasu B'Torah. Now, we turn to Lamed Vav Amud Beis, and we have the opinion of Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish argues with the understanding that Rav Yochanan had given to the Mishnah. He's not arguing with the Mishnah, but if you look in the top Rashi, he says, Lo Amas Nisin Polin. Rish Lakish is an Amora. He can't argue on the Mishnah, but he's arguing on Rav Yochanan's understanding of the Mishnah. As Rashi says over here, El Hosam B'yesh Noachalim, in this Perek in Bava Basra, it said, Pligi Amorai, Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish are arguing B'diyuka D'masnisan as to what exactly the Mishnah is saying and how it should be interpreted. The Chi also Rabin, when Rabin came back from Eretz Yisrael, he said over the name of Rav Yochanan, Amar Yarash Ploni Sode Ploni, V'tinasin Sode Ploni L'Ploni. He said that if you have a situation where the Shchiv Meirah said that so-and-so, this son should be Yoresh, this field, and the other son, V'tinasin Sode Ploni L'Ploni, so for one son to use the Lashon of Yerusha, and for the other son to use the Lashon of Amatana, so then Rav Yochanan Amar Kana, that works, even though he didn't use the Lashon of Amatana by both sons. And Rish Lakish disagrees. And that's what we now have. Rashi continues and he says, Rish Lakish says, and that's where we go to the Gemara over here, the top line, Yomar Rish Lakish le'olam lo'kana. No, this is not good. Actually, Yomar ploni u'ploni yarshu sade plonis u'plonis shenesatim lahem b'matana v'yirashim. If you want to have this idea that these Yerusha and Matana, and we accept the Matana like the Mishnah says, he has to give both sons in the Matana. Can't just give one son the Matana and the other son using the Lashon of Yerusha. But both sons have to be at some point in time, either at the beginning, the middle, or at the end, both sons have to have the Lashon of Matana. Ah, this is the second situation. We have a Machlokas Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish. We'll be passing like Rish Lakish. You have to say it with both sons, the Lashon of Matana, and it's not adequate, like Ravin said in the name of Rav Yochanan, that it would be good if you, as long as you said Matana with one son, even though the other son you never said Matana, you only use the Lashon of Yerusha. That's point number two, where Rish Lakish and Rav Yochanan argue. Number three, the Idach, the third place where they argue, where we pass like Rish Lakish, the Tanan. Mishnah later on in Bava Basra, after the second one. So this one is as follows. It says, Hakosev kol nechaso livno liachamoso. If a person writes over all his nechas and they should go to his son, and he says, it takes effect from now and liachamoso. That's what it means, liachamoso. He's writing it now, and it's as if he has written out, and he says, the sale, I'm giving over this property to my son, this matana, I'm giving it over to my son right now, but it only takes effect le'achamoso. What does this mean? What he's basically saying is, I'm retaining the peros. I have what's called the usufruction rights. I retain the usage of this field. So this field produces a certain amount of olives, a certain amount of grapes every year. I get those and not my son. But I don't own the field. And therefore, it's my son's field. And the minute I die, the person says, that field automatically goes over to the son. It's not part of the Yerusha, it was a Matana. So the division over here is between the peros and the ownership of the field. And which one is more important is a machlokas over here between Rish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. So the Mishnah stated, if you did this, a kosev kol nechasel v'no liachar moso, and it should take effect, you're writing it from now, a certain amount takes effect, and the rest takes effect after the person's death. So then the father in this situation, of any halimkar, the father can no longer sell this field to somebody else. Why? Because it's not his field. He can only sell over the usufruction rights. He can give the rights to somebody to go and get the produce from the field. That is his still, but he can't sell the field to somebody else. And the bain, the son, any halimkar, the son can't sell the usufruction rights. He doesn't have them yet. Peros don't belong to him, because that belongs still to the father. But the son does own the field. And therefore, as a result, if the father sells the field, he doesn't have the right to sell the field, but he has the right to sell the peros. The rights of the peros are in fact sold until the father in fact passes away. And then everything reverts to the son. And if the son were to sell the field, so then the person who the son sold it to, en lalokeach klum, he has no right to the fruits, he has no right to the peiros, up until the time, at sheyomus ha'ab, when the father dies, that's when the son got it, but the son already sold it to somebody else. Now, they asked about this, the following scenario, the itmar, the etzel beis medrash, what happens if mochar ha'bein b'chayeh ha'av, the son sold his rights to the field, the ownership rights of the field, while the father was still alive. So in 2010, the father did this matana to the son and says, you'll own the field, but I still have the rights to the fruits. And then in 2011, the son goes and sells that. He says, listen, I'd rather have the money right now and not wait. And then in 2012, the father never passes away. So in this situation, umeis habein b'chayav, if it was just like I just said, that the father died in 2012 and the son is still alive, so then everything goes through. But what happens, Nebuchadnezzar, the son died before the father died. Umeis habein, the son dies earlier in 2012 and the father dies of a broken heart afterwards, later on. Umeis habein b'chayav, if the son dies before the father. So here we have a machlokes Rav Yochanan Rish Lakish. Rav Yochanan Amar, lo kana lo keach. The person that the son sold it to, in fact, gets nothing. Whatever he paid, that's it. It was like a gamble. He was hoping that the son would die after the father, and that's why he paid it. He probably paid a lower price for it. But in fact, if the son dies before the father, the son never inherited from the father. And Rav Yochanan says, therefore, the son never acquired it. He only was acquiring it at the time of the death, as a matana. But since he wasn't around at the time of the father's death, Nebuchadnezzar had predeceased the father, so then in this situation, Rav Yochanan says, the son never acquires it as a matana. And the rules of this field go through the regular rules of Yerusha. Rish Lakish disagrees. Rish Lakish Amar, no. Kana lokeach, the son owns it from the moment that the father gave it to him as a present. Albeit there's no practical significance to that ownership right now, other than he owns it. But he can't use the fruits because that belongs to the father. But he does own the field, and therefore he could sell the field right now because it's his field. He just doesn't have the rights to the payros. And therefore Reish Lakish says that this sale, even though the son predeceased the father, so at the time that the father dies, it does go to the person that the son sold it to. Now, what exactly is this machlokis, to put it into the Gemara's terminology? Rav Yochanan Amar, lo kona lo keyach, because kinyan peros ke kinyan aguftami. Rav Yochanan says that the son's sale to that other person doesn't take effect, because what's the key thing about ownership of a field? Who has the rights to the fruits? Kinyan haperos, the one who has kinyan peros, he's ke kinyan aguftami. He's considered the real owner of that field. And therefore, the Kenyan Peros is the critical factor, and the father had the Kenyan Peros, and the son deceased before the father died. So therefore, in this situation, Rav Yochanan says the Kenyan HaPeros was everything, and there was no sale or matana given over to the son. On the other hand, Reish Lakish's opinion is, Reish Lakish Amar, no, kana lokeach, the son's sale to the other person, in fact, goes through, even though the son predeceases his father. Why is that? Because Reish Lakish's opinion is, Kenyan Peros lav ke kinyan aguftami. He says, what are you talking about? Ownership of the field is who owns the field. The rights to the fruits, the usufruction rights, the Kenyan Peros, that's a nice benefit, but that's not ownership of the field. And therefore, the sale, in fact, did go through because the son is the owner of the field. And in this situation, we paskin, this is the third situation, we paskin like Reish Lakish over Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, that concludes this sugya, this machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan that we started off with about, does Yibam Mechalitza work on a pregnant woman? And then we threw in these other two cases where we pass him like Reish Lakish over Rav Yochanan. Then we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Ein avlat shel kayama v'chule, if a person, in fact, underwent Yibam while the wife was pregnant, or he finds out afterwards that she's pregnant, so then in that situation, if the vlad is not a vlat shel kayama, the Mishnah said he's allowed to go and stay married to that woman. Verse 12 says, Tana, we learned in the following brisa, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, they said, Yotzi beget, that this woman is not allowed to go and stay married to the Yavam. While she did undergo Yibam, and she no longer requires Chalitza, we want to kansa them. We want to give them a punishment for doing something that was wrong. They shouldn't have undergone Yibam while she was pregnant, and therefore, Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is, Yotzi beget, that we require this Yavam to divorce his wife with a get. And Rashi explains over here in Dibur Maskul, Tonim Shum Rabbi Eliezer v'chule, he says, Rabbi Eliezer, Paulig Asefer de Masnisin. Rabbi Eliezer argues with the author of our Mishnah in the situation of a koi, Ein Havlad Shel Kayama, where the Vlad is not considered to be a Vlad Shel Kayama. The child never was miscarried, or he died before 30 days. It was clear that he wasn't a Bar Kayama. In that situation, the Tanava Mishnah said, Yikayim, you're allowed to stay married. The Yibam, in fact, worked, and this is a regular full Yibam marriage. And Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. The Kamar Iyu, he says, even though one could argue that since it's not a Vlad Shel Kayama, Reuven, in fact, died childless, and the Yibam of Shimon to Rachel was effective, nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer says, Kansina le, we do a knas on him and force him to go and divorce this woman. And it has to be done, the Yotzei beget. You have to go and give a get. And it seems that a get alone is sufficient, because Mishum denichnas l'sofik isser eshesach, because he shouldn't have done what he did. You should have waited. See if it's a Vlad Shel Kayama or not. And even though Rebbe Lezer agrees, this is a perfectly good Yibam, nevertheless, Omiyu beget below Chalitza Sagi. Bottom line is, in this situation, we can't see him, but no longer is Chalitza going to work. You need to give a get over here, and just a get. Others disagree with Rashi's understanding and say that you need a get and chalitza. But we'll learn simple like Rashi that you just need a get. She is considered fully married through Yibam, but we can't see the man for having relations with his woman while she was pregnant, and therefore you need a get to break up the marriage, and we force them to break up the marriage. So this Braisa shows us that there's a machlokas between the Tana of our Mishnah, who says that the marriage can continue, and Rabbi Lezer says the marriage has to be broken up, albeit the Yibam took effect, but we force as a knas for them to get divorced. Amar Rava, Rava says that this opinion of Rabbi Eliezer is identical to an opinion that Rav Meir expressed elsewhere. Rav Meir, for Rabbi Eliezer, Amru Dovarecha, they both said the same thing, which is that we sometimes make a knas to force a marriage to go apart, even though halachically the marriage is a good marriage. What was what Rav Meir said? So Rabbi Eliezer, Hadu Amarin, that's what we just said right now. He said in this situation that we forced this Yibam, which was a good Yibam, to go and be broken apart, and that Shimon has to go divorce his Yavama wife, Rachel, because of this Knas. So where do we find a similar thing, Rava says, in Remeir's Shita? Remeir, what is that? The Tanya. Because it says in the following Brisa, Lo Yisa Adam Uberes Chaveiro Uminekes Chaveiro. A person should not go and marry. Nebuch, a husband dies, and he left his wife pregnant, or he left his wife nursing a young baby. So we don't allow this pregnant widow, or a nursing widow, again, has nothing to do with Yibam here. This is just a regular woman. She had plenty of other children. So this is not a situation of Yibam. This is Eshesach Shalom and Malkum Mitzvah. And she's absolutely permissible to go marry somebody else. But the rabbi said, this is a Din Derabbanan, don't go and marry a pregnant woman or a woman who's nursing, because it may cause the Vlad not to do well. This pregnant woman, if she has relations with somebody else, it may not be good. And likewise, if she's nursing and she gets pregnant again, it may not be good for the baby. And therefore, in this situation, the rabbis made a derabbanan and said, don't get married until the pregnancy is over, she gives birth, and in a situation where she's nursing, where the nursing is done at the end of the 2-year period of time that he normally nursed. What happens if somebody went against this din derabbanan? Rav Meir said, v'im nasa yotzi v'lo yachzer olamis. Rameir said, we make a knas over here, that if somebody didn't follow this din derabbanan of not marrying Muberes Chaveiro, Menekes Chaveiro, so if somebody did go and marry her, so Rameir says, we make a knas and we forbid them to ever get married again. Yotzi, he has to give her a get and never can take her back. Divrei Rameir, that's the opinion of Rameir. Chacham disagree. They say, yes, we don't want you staying together right now, Yotzi, so you have to go and divorce her right now. However, you can be Masi Gushaso. After she gives birth and after the nursing is over, then if you wish, when that point in time comes, Lichnos, if you wish to go take her back, Yichnos, you can go remarry her at that point in time. So Rameir clearly says, a Knas over here, similar to what Rabbi Eliezer said, and that's Rava's point. The Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Eliezer both say that sometimes we make a knas and don't allow them ever to get married. Rabbi Eliezer said in the case of the Yibam, of a pregnant woman, and Rabbi Meir said in the case of a person who married and Muberes Chaveiro, Minekes Chaveiro. Both of them seem to say the same thing. Rava says, we make a knas and they're never allowed to remarry that woman. You must divorce her, you can't remarry her. Amalei Abaye, Abaye questions this, and he says to Rava, why? Mimai? Who says? Maybe they don't agree with each other. Dilmalohi. In fact, Rabbi Eliezer and Rameir aren't saying the same shita. Why is that? Because maybe the case of Rabbi Eliezer was only by din daraisa, and the case of Rameir is only by din derabbanan, as the Gemara now fleshes out. Ad kan lo kama Rabbi Eliezer hocha. In our case of Yibam, which is a din daraisa, Yibam is not allowed to be done. It's a din daraisa if it's eshesach shalom b'malkum mitzvah elam yishum de kapaga b'yisur eshesach daraisa. That's why the rabbis were so strict, and Rabbi Eliezer said we should make a knas in this situation because this person was terrible. He was over a potential issa daraisa of eshesach shalom b'malkum mitzvah. But in the case of Muberes Chaveiro, Menekes Chaveiro, it's only a derabbanan, a b'hasa derabbanan. Taki, you know what? Rabbi Eliezer would say in that situation, like the Chacham, Kerabbanan Sirulei, that we would allow this person just to separate. Yotzi, as the Chacham said, but then after the period of time she stopped nursing, then in that situation, we would allow them to remarry. So who says that Rabbi Eliezer holds like Rabbi Meir? Maybe only the Daraisa that he says we make a knas, but Lav Davka, in the case of derabbanan, do we make a knas? And vice versa as well. Inami, who says Rabbi Meir agrees with Rabbi Eliezer? Maybe I can't look on Rabbi Meir Hossam. Rabbi Meir said by the case of the Rabbanu Muberes Chaveiro, Menekes Chaveiro, you know why we put in teeth over there? Why we made a knas in that situation? Rabbi Meir said, Vimnosa Yotzi Velo Yachzer Olamis? El mishum derabbanan, because it's a din derabbanan, v'chacham masu chizuk l'divrayim yosef mishal Torah. Sometimes the rabbis have to give a little teeth to their gezeira because people sometimes don't follow. It's a derabbanan. Yeah, we don't have to follow it. Chas v'shalom. So therefore, the rabbis put some strength into this gezeira and they put teeth into it and said, if you do marry her, yosef lo yaser olamis. If you go against what the derabbanan said, so then you're in trouble with making a knas. Vad Rebbe would say by a din daraisa, which has its own teeth automatically because it's a din daraisa, we don't have to strengthen it. Aval hocham daraisa mifrash par shemine. It's a daraisa of kares. You don't need to put in any safeguards. You don't need to put in any teeth to make sure that people follow this. And therefore, maybe Rebbe would disagree with Rebbe Elazar, and he would hold like the title of a mishnah that if the yibum took place, so then we would just say you have to separate until the end of the pregnancy, and once it's found out to be a pregnancy, it's a vlad shelo kayama. It's not a viable pregnancy, and you even was good, so go back and marry her. You're kayim. You'll have to stay with her. So Rava's opinion that Rav Meir and Elazar say the same thing is disagreed with by Abaye. Amar Rava. Rava adds, and he says, Uladivri Chachamim Yotzia Beget. He says, in our Raisa, we said, according to the Chachamim, if you married this Muberes Chavero, Menechas Chavero, you must, according to Rabeir, go and divorce her. And Rabeir said, you have to do this as a knas, and you can never take her back. But the Chachamim said, you just separate until the end of the nursing, and then you could, in fact, take her back. And Rava says that everybody agrees, even the Chachamim, that you must divorce her. It's not just you just separate, you must Yotzi. And Omar Mazutra says, I'll show you a raya, the way that Rava said this brisa, that you must divorce her, daikanami, because look at the words. It says, diktani yotzi, you have to have her go from you. In other words, get divorced. The loktani yafri, she didn't say, just separate. Stay married, but just separate. Shmamina, this is a good deal. And the Chacham would say that you must divorce her, albeit you can take her back. And Rameh says, you must divorce her, and you can't take her back. Amalei Ravashi, Rav Hoshaya, Berei de Ravidi. Ravashi said to Rav Hoshaya, who was the son of Ravidi, Hasam Tanan, we learned in the following Braisa. Now, that's the Girsa that we have tonight, but it says in the Masoras Hashas that this is really a Braisa, and the Girsa should be changed, not Tanan, but it should be Tanya. So Hasam Tanya, we learned in the following Braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kol Sheshar B'yadim Shloshim Yom Einu Nefel. If a child is born and it survives for 30 days, it's no longer called the Nefel. It is now a Vlad Shel Kayoma. And in that situation, even Rachmon Litzlan, if something would happen to the child, the woman who gave birth to this child is not considered to have been childless, and therefore her husband is not considered to have been childless, and this woman no longer needs Yibum or Chalitza. As long as the child survived at least 30 days, Kol Sheshar B'yadim Shloshim Yom, then it's considered a Vlad Shel Kayoma, and even Rachmon Litzlan, if something happens to it, it's not called the Nefel. Implication being, Halo Shah, if the child did not survive for 30 days, then sveika havi. Then we're not sure. Is this a Vlad Shel Kayoma or is it not a Vlad Shel Kayoma? We just don't know. Now, if there was evidence that it was a Vlad Shel Kayoma, it was a perfectly healthy full-term baby, and Nebuch gets hit by a truck and dies, so that's not what we're talking about. Here we're talking about, it's a suffix. We don't know. Is it a Vlad Shel Kayoma or not? And the 30 days haven't gone by. So that's what this Braisa, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, tells us. The Itmar, it was said in this regard, Meis beso shloshim yom, Nebuch, if this Vlad dies within a 30-day period of time, the Omdov in Iskatsha, and this woman went ahead and got married to somebody else. Her previous husband is no longer around. He died. And this Vlad that she had just given birth to, Nebuch, dies within the 30-day period of time. So the Omdov in Iskatsha, she went and got remarried to somebody else during this period of time. So Ravina, Mishmei Derava Amar, Ravina says, Im Eishes Yisrael hi, if this woman married a Yisrael, i.e. not a Kohen, who is allowed to be Machzir Grushaso, so Ravina said in the name of Rava, you know what you do in this situation? It makes Yisrael he, Choletzes, we do a Chalitza, because maybe, in fact, this child, which is not a Vlad Shel Kayama, therefore, her first husband, when he died, died childless, and she requires Yibum a Chalitza. So you're not going to do Yibam at this point in time, so you're going to do Chalitza. She married another person. So you're going to do Chalitza at this point in time, and no big deal, because the Yisrael is allowed to marry a Chalutza. However, Ravina says in the name of Rava, Imeshus Koini, if she married a Kohen, she was a widow, and she's allowed to go marry a Kohen, and she married this Kohen, but now there's a question that maybe she needs Chalitza, so then we're allowed to say it's a suffolk whether she needs Chalitza or not, because she did have a Vlad, we just don't know if it's a Vlad Shel Kayama. So Ravina says in this situation, since she's already married to the Kohen, the Imeshus Koini, ain't a Chalitza, we don't require a Chalitza, we allow the suffolk to go and remove the chiyuv over here of chalitza, because otherwise the kohen would have to divorce her, and we don't want to do this to the kohen because now he wouldn't be allowed to marry a chalitza, so we don't require chalitza. That's what Ravina said in the name of Rava. On the other hand, Rav Misharsha, which made the Rav Amar, Rav Misharsha disagreed. And he said in the name of Rava, no, achazu yachazu, whether it's a Kohen who married this woman or it was the Yisrael, in both situations, choletzes. We do require a chalitza. The Kohen's now not going to be able to stay married to her. So that's tough luck. Unfortunately, you shouldn't have rushed in. You should have waited to see what would happen. And therefore, it's a knas in this situation that we require chalitza. And therefore, you won't be able to stay married to the Kohen. So there's a machlokas in Ravina and Rav Misharsha as to what Rava said. So Ravina questions Rav Misharsha. Again, Rav Misharsha said that we make a knas over here and we require this kohen to go and divorce his wife. In any event, we turn to Lama Zayin and Aleph. Ravina said to Rav Misharsha that what you heard in the name of Rava was correct originally, but urta at night, urta is orally arbasa, so we're coming up on Leil B'dikas Chametz, so we always use the expression orally arbasa, so it means that the light of the 14th day, which means really at the dark of the 14th day when the light is going away. So, b'urta, in the evening when Rava gave the shir on this subject, he said like you, Amar Rava Hachi, that you must do a chalitza even though it's going to cause the kedushin of the kohen to go away. You're going to have to divorce her and he can't take her back because she's a chalitza and he'll have to divorce her. But in the morning, he changed his mind. The next morning, Rabbi Tzafra, he retracted that ruling, and he said, no, if it's a Kohen, we don't counsel her in that situation. We don't make the Kohen give her a divorce. We allow her to stay married to the Kohen. So Rabbi Misharsha says to Ravina, really? Amalei, if you will say that this is what happened, Sharisu, and you're saying that this was permitted by Rava to go and allow them to stay married, and then the next thing you're going to do, hey, Rava, the Tishtru of Tarba. The next thing I know, you're going to go and permit. Tarba is forbidden fats. It's the chaylev. So just like you're permitting over here a woman who needs chalitza al-sofik to go and be married to a kohen and not undergo the chalitza because you're concerned about the marriage of the kohen, so you're allowing a potential itzakaris to be done. So the next thing you're going to do is you're going to go and permit Tarba. Tarba is chaylev. It's fats that are achiv karetz. You allow that also. Others have the girsa, the Ritva and the Tosus of Rosh over here have the girsa tarcha. Tarcha is the name for a divorcee. So just like you permitted this woman who requires chalitza to get married to a kohen, and if you do the chalitza, it's only din derabbanan if she stays married to the kohen, you're going to next allow a grusha, which is din deraisa, to go get married to the kohen. It makes a little bit more sense as to why he suddenly brings in chaylev. Tarcha instead of tarba. Well, just like you permitted a chalutza to marry a kohen, you're going to allow a grusha to marry a kohen next. In any event, this is a machlokas between Ravina and Rav Misharsha. So the Gemara asks, this was the question that we started off with over here. The Ravashi asked to Rav Hoshaya, who was the son of Ravidi, and he says, Hocha gabi miuberes chavero, mineches chavero, hanesu lekohen. If, in fact, you have a case where the muberes chavero, mineches chavero, now got married to a kohen, would you or would you not institute the same thing over here? My, mi ovud rabbonin takanta lekohen alo. Would the rabbis hold like Ravina over here who said that, okay, we'll let the kohen get, you know, not have to divorce her? Or would you say like Rav Misharsha? No, in this situation as well, we forced the kohen to give her a get, and obviously he wouldn't be allowed to be maksi gushaso. So that's the question the Rav Ashi asked. So Rav Hoshaya responds and he says, Omalei, hachi hashta, the two cases aren't similar. Bishlam ahasam, in the case that we brought down where the suffix, was it a vlacho kayama, was it not a vlacho kayama, the baby died within the first 30 days. So there, in that situation, you have a svara to say that you can dispense with the chalitza. Kivan the ikar abon and the pligil of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel was not the only opinion. There are those that disagreed with Rav Shimon Gamliel, and they said the arme afa gav de lo shav vlad ma'al yahavi. Even though the vlad didn't live 30 days, we have a chazaka that it's a vlad ma'al yahu. And as long as you don't have evidence that it wasn't a vlad ma'al yah, so there are those that disagree with Rav Shimon Gamliel and say that you don't require chalitza in that situation. So therefore, in that situation, we can be mako. Ravina says to not require the kohen to go divorce her, and we let the kohen stay, because it really wasn't a suffix, did she need chalitza or not? It's a machlokis, does she need chalitza or not? So we can pass it like the chacham who argue with Shimon Gamliel. And therefore, Gabi Eishes kohen, in that situation, Kivin the Levshar, there would be no choice if he has to go give chalitza to her in that situation, so then he wouldn't be allowed to marry her, stay married to her. So therefore, the lo efshir, there's no alternative of dinah karbanon. We do in fact pass like the rabbanon in that situation, not like Rishon Gamliel, and that's why Ravina said it. But here, who says it's the same thing? Aval hocha kiman navid. Who are we going to go like? The two opinions were, if Muber is chavero, Yonek is chavero, that Rav Meir had said, you got to divorce her forever, and the Chama said, you got to divorce her now. And therefore, there's no opinion that says you can stay married to her. Aval hocha kiman navid. Ik Rav Meir, if you want to say, we hold like Rav Meir, ha'amar yotzi v'yasru lomis, you can't ever take her back. And ik Rabbanon, even the Rabbanon say, ha'amre beget, you have to yotzi with get, as we pointed out. And albeit the Chacham say you can take her back, but if it's a Kohen, you can't automatically go and take her back. And therefore, the two cases are different, and that's Rav Hoshaya's answer to Rav Ashi. No, in this situation, we would make the Gzeira that a Kohen has to go and divorce her and cannot take her back. We'll just do a little bit more till we get to the two dots. Itmar, they said in the Beis Medrash, Kitsha Besoch Shlosha Ubarach. A man was Mekadesh, a woman, when she had just unfortunately lost her first husband and was within a 3-month Havchana period of time. And in this situation, he then ran away. So, what do we do about this man? Do we force him to go and divorce his wife? Or do we say he ran away? It's not necessary. So, Pligibor Rav Acha V'Rafram. So, Rav Acha and Rafram, they had an argument as to what the din should be. Chadumar, we don't know which one said which. Chadumar, Mishamtinale, we put him in Shamta, we put him in some sort of an excommunication to force him to go and divorce his wife. The Chadumar, no. The other one said, Iruke, the fact that he ran away, Mistaya, that's enough. As Rashi brings down, Loi boy, Lemichpaya, the Lichtov get, we don't force him to write a get, because the Golidati, the Loi boy, Lichnos Adzmano, he's by definition running away. So therefore, he's not intending to consummate the marriage. He just did the first stage of Kedusha. There's no reason to put a Knas over here. Yes, he shouldn't have done this, but he ran away, so he's certainly not consummating the marriage, so we don't have to do anything further. The other opinion said, no, we have to be concerned that he'll come back and he'll marry you and consummate the marriage, and that would be a problem of Havchana. How do we paskin? So Hava Uvda, there once was such a Maisa. The Amar Lehu Rafram. Rafram, in fact, said, Iruke Mistaya. So it looks like Rafram was the one that said that it's adequate that he ran away. We don't have to go and put him in Shamta. We don't have to go and put him in some sort of an excommunication in order that we should force him to do the divorce. The fact that he ran away is sufficient. With this, we conclude today's share.